Viking believes that a journey on the rivers of the world can be an experience designed for the thinking person. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at raymondjames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Lakoff, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. Grantchester is a cozy kind of series, with wit and charm bursting out of the seams, even as blood and murder lurk not so quietly in the background.
You realize if a nun is the wife of God...
She's not a nun.
You've slept with your boss's missus. That's all I'm saying.
It's something Grantchester stars like Lauren Karst noted when they spoke with us here on the podcast.
I love that line. Daisy writes really well, and that's the kind of sharp humor that she has, and she challenges people, and she gives as good as she gets.
In a bit of a departure from a typical British television drama, Grantchester employs a writer's room, and we were lucky enough to speak to a few of this season's writers in a special bonus conversation about crafting the false Eden of the fifth series. Writers Daisy Coulomb, Joshua St. Johnston, and John Jackson join us here on the podcast, and in a first for us, in a special video excerpt from our respective voluntary quarantines on either side of the Atlantic Ocean, available now on pbs.org/masterpiece. This week, we are going inside the writer's room on Grantchester, and we are joined by Daisy Coulomb, John Jackson, and Joshua St. Johnston. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Writer's rooms, while ubiquitous in Hollywood, are still somewhat rare in British television. What does it mean to a series like Grantchester to have a team of writers working on a season together?
We were all kind of doing multiple projects at the same time, which is often the case. So Grantchester is a funny one because, you know, this is like season five. So we, touch wood, kind of know what we're doing. So it's not like you need a big room for like weeks and weeks and weeks to break it, because, you know, you don't need to kind of go over the characters and stuff like that. So
Have you ever done an American style room? Because it sounds really alien to me.
Yeah, I've done a few and it's really different. Josh, you've done a few, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd call them American style in as much as sometimes they start at 10 and finish at 4. I think you're lucky if they last more than 3 weeks. I think American style is they last 6 months and you're there from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. if you're lucky. Yeah, I like the 10 till 6 or 10 till 5 framework.
Yeah, I like the way we do it on this, which is like we don't really sit down and literally figure out every scene or not even every episode, really. We kind of figure it out. You know, we really had like a couple of days just thinking about what the kind of broader themes were. And then we came up with a bunch of stories that we worked on together that reflected that theme. And then me and Daisy just kind of sat down in your
my office. Little tiny office. Yeah. You were sitting on my gym ball. So I remember.
Right.
John sits on the gym ball. I type. We bash
That's
it out. Try and get a drink in the pub at the end.
Yeah.
Back when we had pubs.
Back when there were pubs. I mean, so you don't then sort of assign scripts, writers go off to write. How does the process work on Grantchester? How much interplay is there between sort of the individual episode writers in terms of making sure that those story beats line up?
So everyone will be assigned their episode. And then really, you don't really have script editors in America, do you?
No.
So Danny, our script editor, is sort of the person who keeps the thread all together across each episode to make sure everyone's connects up. And then I'll read everyone's scripts. We'll sort of go back and forth, really. It does seem a much more sort of laissez-faire attitude, actually. Than I'm sure it's much more stringent in America than we are.
I think Grantchester is like one from the old school, which is what I quite like about it. It's kind of like it was when I sort of started, I think, in a way. And it's not like that on a lot of shows now. And I think it's, you know, hopefully in a good way, like reflected. But in terms of eps with this one, I guess with Josh, the kind of funny story was that me and Daisy were like trying to make Josh come and do one. So we were like, what story can we come up with to make Josh want to do it? So we came
that's
up with
right.
the whole kind of like LSD.
Yeah, through the hook.
We thought, yeah, exactly. Josh, let's do like a drug story.
It's kind of a cerebral kind of episode that really focused on the moral ambiguities of LSD. We're like, Josh, if we can't get Josh with that, I don't know how we get him.
That sounds much more creditable.
Yeah, sorry, mate.
So one of the amazing things I think that you guys always do, and I've only been on two series, and I guess, you know, we did have a day or a half day on season two, but I missed it all on season five. But you just come with this really complete vision of what this series is about. And, you know, I guess the difference with a lot of shows is it's, you know, and it's a really good story of the week because it's a detective show. And it's incredibly generous of you to come up with the story of the week for people like me who are just visiting. But then also, not just the story of the week, but sort of it's so clear, you know, what points on that story you want to sort of resonate with the big overarching story of the season. I think it makes it incredibly easy for guest writers to turn up and do a good job. You know, the theme this year, it was about Eden and ideas of Eden and how real they are and how sustainable they are and where sort of real happiness lies. It's amazing that after four seasons already, you can come up with a really good theme like that, which works for a detective show, but also works for a character who's a vicar. And it feels like you haven't done it in any of the previous four seasons. That's really exciting.
So I want to ask about that sort of idea of Eden and happiness. We have this sort of overarching theme for this season.
Being cast out of Eden left us hopeless, despairing, craving a return to a place that was lost. But even though Jesus died to cleanse us of our sins, we still find ways to sin against each other.
What sort of ideas does that spark when Daisy says that's sort of what we want to explore this year? Are you sort of throwing out ideas individually? Are you sort of, in this case, you know, how do you tie in an episode about LSD use and murder to this sort of overarching theme? How do those pieces come together?
You coined it, John. Do you remember? You coined the phrase that it was about Eden. Because we were sort of working around this idea of everyone's in a lovely place and, you know, everyone's happy. And we're like, how do we make this biblical? How do you reference it biblically? And you're like, well, it's the fall of Eden kind of thing. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think it kind of came from three places, which was exactly that. It was like where we'd finished like season four, that everyone was kind of on this high, which is like not the greatest place to start a drama season of anything. Like, you know, everyone's happy. What do we do? And then I think one of the things that Danny had put on the wall of the bunker when we were storylining that first couple of days was that Macmillan quote, the Prime Minister at the time, who'd said, "You've never had it so good." So we just kind of started to run with this idea that actually we're in the good times here. And what does that mean? And in a way, like Grantchester as a show and as a place, if you've ever been there in the 50s, is that kind of idyllic sort of England that you imagine. And as you know, I think as everyone, you know, being, if you're being honest, you kind of know it's never that simple. Like you can kind of look back on it, it's kind of misty-eyed. But as in the show, you know, every episode kind of starts like that, but then there's a murder in it and it's much darker than you think, as are all kind of idealistic things, I think. So it was that, and then it was where all the characters were, and particularly like Will as a sort of idealistic young man. This was like Will's chance and Tom's chance to take the series and make it his. And it's like, well, what would Will's kind of Eden be? And then the story just kind of came quite naturally from that. It was like, let's find a bunch of different Edens and kind of like explode them. I guess we do, but like have a look at the reality underneath the Edens. So like they kind of came quite quick, really, didn't we? I mean, like we had seven, then we just went with six.
I mean, what's intriguing to me is how you managed to track the characters' journeys, hitting those story beats while still advancing this sort of case of the week mentality. Clues have to be gathered, suspects are interrogated. Which takes precedence? Is it ever tricky to sort of balance the needs of the character arcs with the sort of case of the week?
Yeah. I think if we're all being honest, don't we more enjoy our character, like doing that world And there's a lot of time where you just go, I just want to stay with Leonard and Mrs. C, and I love them so much, and oh God, there's a crime. It's trying to be satisfying with the crime and also do what you want to do as a writer, which is enjoy those characters. Is that how you feel?
Yeah,
but I quite enjoyed a sort of technical challenge of trying to do it differently, because, you know, there's been a lot of episodes now, and it's, and God, Daisy, I don't know how Daisy's done as many as she's done. It's just so tough. But there is something, you know, it's not long. It's like, it's less than an hour, and you've got to kind of get all the balls in the air and kind of land them, which, you know, not make it obvious. I mean, I kind of enjoy it, like, and like the world building of that is kind of fun, like, you know, with Josh's, you know, going into that LSE world or the girls' college, you know, it, there is something fun about dropping your characters into those worlds, because, you know, Geordie is always Geordie, like, wherever you put him, he's the kind of same guy.
I know what you're saying, John, about the technical aspects, like sort of solving a crossword or something. You're incredibly good at it, I have noticed, which is why maybe you enjoy it so much. I think I enjoy it too. For me, it's definitely the hardest thing.
I think,
because it, you know, it has to be right and it has to work. And then, you know, you'll get a note saying, oh, they didn't, you know, have that way of solving crimes in 1957 or whatever. Oh, back to the drawing board. Or we used that piece of evidence in the previous episode, so you're going to have to use something other than, you know, the bloody candlestick or whatever.
I did want to ask, I mean, not having things like DNA evidence or cell phones or being able to trace someone's GPS, does that open up story possibilities in a way that telling a mystery in the present day eliminates?
Don't you think that as soon as you take out a mobile phone, then you then you create drama almost as soon as you take the mobile phone out of it? Because there's jeopardy and you can't just go phone somebody up and... I don't know, just things like that. They have to sort of be a bit more cerebral about it, maybe?
Totally. And I think it gives you the chance to have those kind of like walk and talks you can't do when people are like sitting at... Like, I hate scenes where people are like sitting at computers and they just find the thing. And you know, I think some of the best like Will and Geordie scenes are the ones when they're kind of on the way to going to find the clue. Like, and I think we're all trying to use those. Like, I think we all try to... like make those moments not just expositional or crime moments, that they should kind of function on two levels, so you get a kind of relationship beat out of there as well.
Retracing your steps. American mumbo jumbo. Lot to answer for, those Americans.
Can you finish this conversation in your head?
I suppose you got used to losing stuff living in a stately home.
Yeah, and God, if you could do it easily with GPS, then you'd lose all those moments, which I think are often the best ones.
Do you ever write murderer roles with a specific actor in mind? Ollie Dimsdale's wife, Zoe Tapper, for example, plays homicidal cigarette girl Betsy in episode 3. I mean, do you write those roles with an actor in mind? Do you say this would be perfect for X or Y?
That was Emma, wasn't it? Emma, the producer, has a massive girl crush on Zoe Tapper. So, and she's been trying to get her in the show forever, so it was like, it's her role, get her in. So I think, you know, some people have favorite actors, like Julian Glover in the Christmas episode. You're like, oh my God, we got Julian Glover. You know, you kind of have these moments where you kind of have a wish list, and then sometimes it happens if you're lucky. You got some good ones though, didn't you? You got Stella Gonne, Josh.
Yeah, I didn't write with anyone in mind this time. I mean, one of the things which is such a joy coming to write for Grantchester is that Daisy just created all these characters with incredibly strong, clear voices. So, and then it attracted a great cast. And obviously Will is newer, but he's great. But then lots of regs who actually take up a lot of the story time, screen time.
Yeah.
And so you've got all these great actors that you know you're writing for already, and you can just hear it. I find it so easy to write, apart from the detective plotting, because you just know how they're going to make a line work. You know what would come out of their mouth. And so actually it's quite nice not having other actors in mind for the other parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think like some of the, especially the comedy, I think plays like Tess is so good. Like Mrs. C is so good. All of them really can do it. So you don't have to kind of over egg the jokes, I don't think. Sometimes like you just know it's going to be funny. Just she'll roll an R in a certain way or something. So you just have to kind of find the right word and it'll be,
Well, you don't overwrite it. I did get that. I got the note from Emma to give Mrs. C more looks and less lines. Because, you know, she was coming back with lines when she would have quite rightly just given a look. And when Mrs. C gives a certain look, it's priceless.
It is priceless. No, we are really lucky. I think the show does have a really good, like, people want to do the show because they hear other people have a nice time on it. I think because the main cast, I can imagine if you're a sort of actor who's coming in and out of shows, the main cast is really important, and our main cast are really nice to people, you know, make them feel welcome. So I think that's part of it as well. That's why we get such good people.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors. All Veranda Staterooms. Every day, a new view. Viking, offering a small ship experience on the world's oceans and a shore excursion in every port. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com. Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. This season is the most explosive thus far, resulting in a fifth episode reveal that was horrifically shocking, not just to Will Davenport, but to the viewers as well. We talked about this a little bit, Daisy, but where did this idea for the Vic Morgan revelation come from?
Didn't we have a newspaper article, John? I feel sure I brought, or maybe I brought one in, and it was about how there were these boys' sort of rehabilitation. They were real, these kind of places where... and we thought Will would be into that kind of idea of, you know, rehabilitating criminals and setting them on the right path, you know, in his kind of boat rocker sort of persona. So we started from there, and then we just, I don't know, how did we do it, John?
Well, I think it was that, but I think it was like, we were kind of thinking, like, what is, like, back to that theme, what is Will's kind of ultimate Eden? And the idea of this place, which was kind of supposed to be inspiring and based on kind of work and, you know, obviously loves boxing, but just this place, which was like this father figure in Vic.
Thank you to the Cambridgeshire Police for their begrudging support.
Will, come up here. Come on. Ladies and gentlemen, this man has been a literal godsend.
It's all you, Vic. Don't let it go to your head. Be an inspiration.
Thank you, son.
We were being mean to Will, I think. I mean, it is going like, what is his greatest place and how can we make it, you know, what's
the
worst
stake? Can we bring him down, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, how do we kind of have the fall of this place? Because I think that's what the series is really about.
We were saying but it's about him growing up, weren't we? Do you remember we were sort of talking about this is the series where Will grows up, realises the world isn't perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sad, really. It's sad, you know, that had to happen. But I think that ep is, I think, the best ep of the whole series. Daisy's ep 5. It's amazing. It's just so well done, like all of it. But it's hard, though. It's a hard ep, I think.
I'm curious about how, as writers, the team wove those little hints and clues about Vic throughout the season. How much did you collectively want to hint at what he was without hanging a lantern on it?
I have to say, Emma gave me a really clear note, which is the hint not at all, and do anything that I could to just make the audience love him and trust him and root for him.
Yeah.
And my episode was the episode just before. And, you know, it's a really good note because we want to be with Will in terms of, like, when that shock comes, we want to be completely shocked.
Yeah. And that was, I suppose, there were hints of it, weren't there, in the when Matthew tries to rob the cinema, and it's obviously comes from a place of he's desperate to get out and he just can't say the words. And it's only if you look back that you realise that's what's going on. So we knew... We wanted to piece, but that was the main thing, wasn't it? Make him, and also Ross Noble, the actor, is, you just want to give him a cuddle because he's so, you know, yes, and he's a really nice person. Right. He's just good at playing that avuncular guy. So, yeah.
And like Josh says, like we wanted to be with Will, but also with Geordie, like those both, I mean, as you know, I think naive is too strong a word for it, but we had this idea that he, you know, was kind of innocently looking up to him, but he's sharp enough that I think if there was any sense that there was something off with this guy, he wouldn't have stood for sending Matthew there or other boys there. And I think, you know, we'd sort of use the fact that Will and Vic are kind of bonding, and that Geordie was kind of, you know, kind of jealous about that in a way, as the misdirect that's so Geordie, you know, put, you know, anything that he thought was off about it was him going, oh, it's just me being silly and maybe I'm being jealous about that. So it's almost like he's blindsided by what it really is. And like Will too, yeah. Like in a way, because, you know, he's kind of got these two father figures to choose from, that the idea of him being pulled both ways kind of made him blind to it. So does that, is that
we did say that. That's what we did. I mean,
maybe they're both right. I don't know.
No, I think he doesn't like him, but yes, you're right. Exactly what you said. But he's twisted by the idea that he's losing Will to this other father figure, sort of, in a subtle way.
But that's the thing, that I think it was a case of like not putting anything overt in there so that they could blame that any kind of hairs on the back of the neck feeling about this guy, they could ascribe it to other things and not to that. I think that was important, because yeah. I think if there was any sense that Geordie or Will thought that it was something like that, then they would never have.
The shock wouldn't have happened. In Epfo, you'd have been guessing. Did you not see it, Jace? Did you not see it coming?
No, not at all. It's only, I've seen it now three times, so it's only going back that I keep seizing on to these small moments that I'm like, that's a hint, that's a clue. But going through the first time, I had no idea. So it completely took me by surprise and was just a horrific episode to watch, because you did feel like, Will, that you'd had the rug pulled out from beneath you and your whole worldview is sort of shaken by the fact that this guy who seems innately good, like a do-gooder, is actually the face of evil. It was very traumatic to watch. I think especially because Will's reaction to it is so devastating. We are devastated as well.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that you guys told the story in that way, because that seems to represent the reality, doesn't it? I mean, that was the sort of the whole Jimmy Savile thing. And creating that persona that is like a character from Eden, you know, someone who is helping boys and, you know, a force for good in the world, that's what allows them to get away with doing what they do.
Yeah, that's what Geordie says, isn't it? We were all fooled by him, kind of, you know, everyone was fooled by him. So that's how they work, those men.
Yeah, Emma gave me this great note, which is, we're grooming the viewers in the same way that, you know, he's grooming Will. And that, you know, that's such a great sort of metaphor for it, because it makes it's the thing that makes it work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was in the air, in the atmosphere, wasn't it? It was the whole hashtag Me Too movement was happening. It was all kind of swirling around. And I think you just pick up on those feelings.
Will chafes against Amelia's new relationship and his guilt over his father's death. Leonard stands up to his father. Kathy deals with her mother's bipolar disorder and her childhood trauma. Was it intentional to link the theme of parental-child relationships this season? I mean, it seems as though every one of the characters, or nearly every character, is suffering through some form of parental trauma, in a way.
Yeah, I think we started with... Where did we start? But I know that it, thematically it fits into that thing of growing up, people shedding the sort of the things that are holding them back, like your episode, Josh, with Kathy and her mum. In a sense, she has to let go of that past that's been holding her back.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it felt to me like a really important thing. I mean, you say that Will is in a good place at the start of season five, and he thinks he is, but the truth is, it's not that long since his father blew his brains out, having been responsible for another person's death in a fight. So, you know, Will still has all that to work through, but he's working through it really badly, i.e. not at all. And I think that was just there in the backstory.
The final image of the season finally brings Will back to what is important, the sort of friends and family around him. Is this Will finally realizing that he has found Eden on Earth after all? That it is sort of within these people that he knows?
We were talking about, Josh, John, that whole idea of you find the truth within that perfection. You have to sort of strip away all the perfection and just go, what I have is good enough. What I have is is perfect in its own sort of way, I suppose. And that's what, yeah, it's about family. For him, he has found his family. And that's what I'm really excited about in the next season, is just really exploring Will properly within that mix. John and I have just been working away on that, haven't we? So
I asked Tom Brittany about this, but I'd love to pose this question to the writers as well. The season ends on Will's birthday after he's given up his vow of celibacy by sleeping with Sister Grace. Is the fact that it's his birthday intentional? Is this intended to sort of be seen as a rebirth of sorts for Will Davenport?
I think, do you know what? It's really terrible, but I just did it because I really like the idea that he's lying in bed with a nun and he just goes, it's my birthday today.
It's my birthday today.
Happy birthday. How old are you? Actually, I'm not sure I want to know.
That's all it was, really. Well, I think you're right. It is a sense of he's grown up. He's another
year older. Yeah.
And he's stopped believing that in this impossible kind of way of living. So he's free to, he's free to go off and have fun in series six, I think.
Yeah, I think that was it. The celibacy was a big part of the Eden thing. It was this idea that there was this, like, this sort of perfection, like that sort of purity, like we must keep this. And in a way, it's a sort of a fallible idea. You're almost kind of putting too much stock in something, which probably, you know, if you're not addressing the death of your father, then don't worry about your celibacy. It was kind of so it felt like that was like the natural, you know, that's where it had to go, like to,
yeah, maybe not with a nun though. I don't know. We might have been going a bit crazy at that point.
Forbidden fruit.
Yeah, absolutely.
With season five wrapped and a sixth season on deck, yay, what are some of the ideas or themes that you are looking to explore in this upcoming season of Grantchester?
Again, we storylined it quite quickly, didn't we? Do you remember? It was like 2 days, and then sat on my gym ball again. You came and sat on my gym ball. So it's about justice versus injustice, and the idea that within justice there can be, so you can fulfill justice in the law, you can get a result, somebody can go to prison, but is it always just to do that? Is that always the right thing? And it's sort of, without giving too much away, about challenging Geordie's belief in his job as a power for good, which, blimey, let's face it, somehow we've managed to get ahead of the curve on that one because of the whole Black Lives Matter and everything. You feel like, when does police work, when does it slip over into something slightly bad?
It was the moral versus the legal, I think.
That was it, yeah. Well done, you put it better. Yeah.
No. But it's interesting because I think that's Will and Geordie, right? You know, Geordie is the legal, and Will's the moral, and both of them, that's them as kind of archetypes, but they've both got room for maneuver in that, because that's not necessarily to say the church is always right either, and it's not necessarily to say, you know, the law is always right, and both of them kind of know that, but they find themselves in different
impossible
places.
We basically put them both in impossible situations this series, which test them and their belief in their work. It's good, I think. I'm quite excited.
I'm really excited. It's exactly that. It's moral, legal. And I think we're, you know, the idea of like a bigger story as well as episode stories.
A story that takes us sort of right through.
Yeah. But, you know, as ever, hopefully, you know, really engaging standalones.
Obviously, Grantchester tends to be six episodes each season. Season six has eight. How does having those extra installments change the way that you structure story? Is it more real estate to explore character dynamics or to tell a more complicated sort of season-long plot?
It was, do you know what? It was so much easier with eight, because I think sometimes, because it's only six, we find we're like, oh, we want to tell this story. Like, we want to do more with Kathy and her mum, but we have to sort of park that to do Will and Vic. Or if we'd had eight episodes there, we could have done so much more with Kathy and her mum, I think. And it just gives it a bit more breathing space, I think, don't you think, John?
Yeah, definitely. Wasn't there one season where we were going to do it and we storylined it and it was hard, but we figured out we had to do something a bit different, like, because with six, you can almost, in a series story, you can tell one story. But I think with eight, you need to kind of work a little bit harder. That story needs to do more. You need, you know, an extra couple of twists and turns, obviously, but it just needs to be bigger, or you need to find kind of almost two bigger stories that you can play next to each other.
That's what we've done, really, isn't it? We've got two stories that sort of intersect, really, and one takes over the second half slightly more. it's good because we've got so many good core casts that it's just nice to use them because they're all brilliant. And you're just like, oh, damn, we need more Leonards and more everyone, really. So I think
this is the season that Mrs. C becomes a serial poisoner, and she's sort of poisoning everyone.
No, spoilers. Manchester. Spoilers. I know. What are you doing?
I would love to see Tessa as a murderer, though. That'd be great. But no, I won't spoil.
Write it down, Daisy.
Every single murder is attributed to her across from series one onwards. Oh, she's got away with it for so long.
Guys, thank you so very much. Thank you, Daisy, John, and Joshua. This has been fantastic. Thanks so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you.
Pretty
fun.
The Summer of Mystery continues with a thrilling new season of Endeavor, and later this fall, three bold new series come to Masterpiece: Vandervalk, Flesh and Blood, and Roadkill.
You're late. You were told about the briefing, I take it.
Yeah, I was, but I went to the briefing room because that's where I thought the briefing was taking place.
Wow, that's a bit literal. Nothing is as it seems, Clovis.
Also got a phone call. There's another dead body.
We'll have interviews with the stars from these new titles and more right here on the podcast this autumn. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Alicia Baitoop is our editor. Rebecca Eaton is the executive producer at large of Masterpiece. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Suzanne Simpson. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust.